Chiland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcioland podcast. So today we're going to start to wrap up the Serie A season. Today we're going to focus on Juve's ninth title, what that says about them, the rest of the league, and Sarri's first season at the club. We'll address a little bit Conte's recent meltdown. I don't want to go too deep on this because things can change, especially even by the time you hear this episode, but we'll talk a little bit about this. We have quite a few hot transfer topics to get to, so we'll address those. And to wrap up Juve's Scudetto and Conte's rant, I couldn't think of anyone better than our friend Riccardo Pratesi, who used to cover Juve and Conte for Gazzetta dello Sport and is very familiar with the topic. And of course, we'll have a special part of the podcast for our patrons only. But before we get started, I just want to take a moment to thank everyone. So many of our listeners reached out to me while I was in the hospital for the third time during the month of July. I really appreciate it. I feel a lot better. Hopefully I'm done with the hospitalizations and we can get back on track with the podcast. Also want to thank Alex and Steven from Steven Scouting. That episode they did on Friday last week on the young prospects in Serie A was truly outstanding. If you didn't hear it, I definitely recommend it. Very excited to be joined by my dear friend Alex Goldberg. So Alex, this is up your alley. Your two former coaches have been in the headlines in Serie A. So I want to ask you this. I can't tell you how many times I've had to, you know, debate Chelsea fans on Twitter that, you know, at least you can't take away from Sarri that he had hit all his objectives at Chelsea. Although, you know, I wouldn't say it was a particularly brilliant season. And look, always at Juve, the main objective is winning the Scudetto. That was done. But, you know, I'd say both, I think it's fair to say, are pretty underwhelming. In your opinion, if you had to list between the two, what was more underwhelming? His season at Chelsea with the Europa League and the Champions League qualification, or this one at Juve where he won the title?
You know, David, I pray that most of my followers don't listen to me this episode because it's going to really sound like I have a sorry agenda here. But this is a great question because both were very underwhelming. Wow, I didn't even think about how underwhelming both are. And I'm really not trying to rag on, sorry, I like them more than a lot of people think I do. But the Europa League specific, now the third place accomplishment in the Premier League, a little better because it's the Premier League, even though Eden Hazard was absolutely incredible and had 16 and 15 and did a little bit of a carry job, but I think Sarri's performance as a manager in the Premier League should be applauded a bit more. Third place, that was pretty good. But the Europa League, as everybody says on Twitter, they played a bunch of Wi-Fi passwords. I mean, all the teams that Chelsea played pretty much in the Europa League were not very good. Not very good at all. So the Europa League win, they finally get to play a team like Arsenal in the final, and one of the best players in the world was absolutely phenomenal. So from Sarri's perspective, I mean, he kept it together. You know, that's the biggest pat on the back I can give him, is he did when things were really bad and he almost got sacked. He kept it together. He kept the ship together. And they played well in the final, but it was underwhelming. The Europa League trophy, underwhelming. And then this season at Juve, my God, really underwhelming. I mean, they crawled to the finish line from a Juve standard. They really did. The fact that Inter finished, David, 1 point behind, that boggles my mind because it didn't feel like that. I mean, wow. So what was more?
Yeah, I was going to ask you. It never felt close, right?
Never.
I know but that still makes it underwhelming, though,
very,
right? Although you look at the standings, you're like, oh, what a close league. But then, you know, we went through all the ebbs and flows. It never really felt them down, but it's still underwhelming, right?
Yeah, so my answer will literally be the tiebreaker is your famous quote about the status quo. So I will say that the Juve one was even more underwhelming just by a hair because they've won all of these Scudettos. So I have to kind of go with the narrative that many managers could have won Juve the Scudetto this season. So that's even more underwhelming to me that Sarri won Juve the Scudetto because so many managers, in my opinion, probably could have got them to this point specifically in the Serie A season, but the Europa League title was pretty underwhelming as well. But I'm not at all bashing it. Thank you, Maurizio, for it. But I'll say Juve was just a bit more underwhelming. Underwhelming. Yeah. So, David, that's my answer. And just overall, I mean, now it really sounds like I've ragged on Sarri hard here, but wasn't really my intention. I'm just being honest. What did you make of his first season at Juve?
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, I know you kind of quoted one of my things, but regardless of that, I do feel this Juve one's a little bit more underwhelming. So you guys know that I love Sarri, but I also try to be a little bit objective. Let me begin by saying that I expected more. There's no way around it from him. I think, you know, what's interesting is that I think both at Chelsea and Juve, you know, there's more expectations and desire to win. So I definitely think that Sarri compromised, you know, his principles and his way of interpreting football to make that happen. So on one hand, I give him credit for being more pragmatic, but I think he sacrificed too much of what he's all about. As much as I'd be very surprised if Sarri isn't Juve's coach in the season that's going to start really in September next season coming up. But my wish for him is that, you know, whenever this Juve chapter ends, he can go to a team where he can focus more on his style of play, and we can all benefit from that. But as far as, you know, how do I judge Sarri's first season at Juve? Let me begin by saying, by listing the things where I think he deserves a little bit of a break for things, you know, maybe that are out of his control. As I stated, you look at the standings, it looked like Juve was in a dogfight all season to win the title. The reality was not the case there. I mean, sure, were there times that Lazio looked like they could challenge Juve before the coronavirus? Absolutely. Was there a moment where maybe Atalanta looked like they could surge? Maybe. We remember Thousand Names famously picked Inter once Calcio came back, and I laughed. He couldn't even complete the word, and I laughed, but here they are 1 point away. But I think Juve showed they were superior to Inter. Look, the squad wasn't particularly good. Our friend Riccardo Pratesi made a fantastic point in the interview. The only new addition that made an impact on Juve this season was De Ligt. No one else did, not Danilo, not Rabiot to a certain extent. The second half of the season did pretty well, but you can't say that he was a great addition throughout the season. Ramsey was okay, but ultimately not a game changer in any way. So the squad wasn't great. Then Sarri had to deal with Pjanic being sold before the season was completed and managing a player who he knew was leaving. He also had to deal with two strikers, Ronaldo and Dybala, who really aren't going to press back and help on defense, which is a big part of what Sarri does. I mean, we know he likes to defend up front when the other team gets the ball, but you're really not going to get Ronaldo and Dybala to really do that much. Now, on the other hand, Ronaldo and Dybala carried him, and they made up with individual brilliance what was lacking in the beautiful style that we've known Sarri before his time at Chelsea. So those are the reasons. If you want to give him a break, you can give him a break. But at the same time, Juve had a massive payroll. They had a really deep squad. That became even more important once the new format came back with Calcio playing every 3 days. That certainly helped Juve, although they crawled to the finish line, as you pointed out. Once they had essentially clinched the title after that draw against Atalanta, Juve was really dreadful, really un-Juve-like. But they really kind of milled in the season. So it would have been a bigger gap. But there's no way around it. I'm disappointed with Sarri. In Italy, there's a saying, il buongiorno si vede dal mattino. You can tell if it's going to be a good day with how things start in the morning. Sarri started his tenure at Juve with pneumonia, missing the first match. And really, in a lot of ways, never really got into gear. I can name maybe three or four times where we maybe felt like Sarri ball was coming. Ironically, was the first match against Parma where Juve had a ton of chances to score. We had that brilliant game against Inter before the break. And then we had a stretch of games when Calcio came back, when they were playing some weaker teams that Juve looked really good, and then it fell apart. Aside from that, you really wouldn't have seen a big difference from the Allegri team, but Juve just couldn't hold leads. And that's something really, really concerning. While Sarri isn't really known as a great defensive coach, the amount of goals that Juve gave up, even with the injuries to Chiellini and whatnot, definitely concerning. So if I had to give Sarri a grade for the season, still gets the title. The squad wasn't great. I feel if you want to be super generous, it would be like a C minus. So I'm going to leave it at that because I do like Sarri. But there's no way around it. I'm definitely disappointed a bit. Hmm.
Very fair. Very fair. All right. Well, it only gets more fun for me specifically talking about all my guys. Let's move on to one who, David, wow, is this a juicy story, isn't it? And it just was bound to happen. I need to ask you, what was your initial impression of Conte's recent, and keyword recent, because there are many, meltdown?
Yeah, this was really a meltdown for the ages. I have to say, you know, I've been following Conte for a while. I know he had a few at Chelsea, but this one takes the cake. And look, you know, I get the reaction that, you know, if instead of talking of Conte's rant, we'd be talking about Inter finishing second, just 1 point away, best defense in the league, less number of defeats. Look, I think Inter should be very happy with the first year of Conte, and it probably would have been a lot better if that was the takeaway. You know, on top of that, we already had Hakimi coming in. Today, they worked out the deal with Alexis Sanchez, who's been really good. So, you know, in a lot of ways, we could have had a nice kumbaya moment, end of the Serie A season, trying to give some positive momentum going into the Europa League, which, hey, Inter has a chance of winning, if you ask me. But no. Conte had to see, saw this opportunity to really make a statement. So for those who didn't follow too closely, Conte really wasn't complaining about the transfer market. And that was also my initial reaction, was a bad read on that, saying, you know, what is this guy complaining about based on everything Inter does? His problem was really with the way the team, with the media. And I think his main complaint was all the leaks that are out at the media. Doesn't feel like the team is protected. He implied there are some people that have been there even long before Spalletti were around that have a great relationship with the media. I think if you read between the lines, he's talking about sporting director Piero Ausilio, who's been there forever. And, you know, he hasn't any titles to show for it. I think Ausilio's a good sporting director, but, you know, he does have some, you know, gets along well with the media. And look, that's part of the job as well. But I do think Conte really did have a few statements that were over the line a little bit. You know, I believe that dirty laundry should be done in-house, maybe not publicly like that. But as you'll hear in our interview with Riccardo Pratesi, this is kind of Conte's MO. You know, what's interesting to me is Conte himself, at the beginning of the season, when he was asked what the objective was, he said it was to bridge the gap with Napoli and Juve. Now, obviously, they more than bridged the gap with Napoli, and they were 1 point behind Juve. Now, is the gap really more 6, 7, 8 points? Yeah, probably. But even then, we're talking from 20 points to 6 to 7. That's a big gap. Inter had done a ton for him on the transfer market. And look, there's issues with the media and leaks for every team in Serie A. I think almost every big team in Italy feels that they're not treated well with the media. So it is what it is. My thought right now is pretty simple as we're recording this afternoon on Monday. I do think cooler heads will prevail. I do realize that's kind of ironic when we talk about Pazza Inter and Antonio Conte to talk about cooler heads prevailing. But Marotta's there. If you read really carefully what Conte said, it really didn't seem like he had a big problem with Marotta. It was really everyone else associated with Inter, the director at the club level. So I do think cooler heads prevail. There's just too much money at stake. Conte makes 12 million net a season. If he resigns, good luck finding another team that's going to be willing to pay him that right away. And Inter, to fire him, would have to basically pay him off on top of Spalletti. And as one of my Twitter followers pointed out, I know Inter put the expense of Spalletti's salary for the next season on the last financial statement. But still, that's still a ton of money to pay managers who aren't coaching your team. So despite the fact that Allegri is there for the taking, and man, what a great replacement for Conte. You already did it once. And we've talked about it on the podcast. You can almost make a case where Allegri Inter is maybe even more dangerous in a sense, because Conte did bring him from A to B in a way. But I do think cooler heads will prevail. But hey, leave it to Conte. As our listener Bernhard pointed out, he is the gift that keeps on giving if you do content for Serie A. So God bless him. Also, today there was a meeting between Conte and President Zhang that was pretty cordial, and they left it at, let's focus on the Europa League. And that leads me to believe even more that cooler heads will prevail. But definitely check out what our friend Riccardo Pratesi has to say on the topic. So now let's get to some hot transfer topics. I know we haven't talked about transfers for a little bit. So, Alex, what are we going to start with?
All right, David, let's start with this. What do you make of the potential Ndombele for Skriniar swap?
Man, this is a fascinating one. And look, you know, a few weeks ago, we talked on the podcast that Skriniar was available for the taking and has been available for a while. And I got to be honest, that's something that even shocked me. But once those rumors started, I did some digging, and before you know it now, then Skriniar is heavily involved in a swap for Ndombele. So let's unpack it from every angle. So obviously Skriniar didn't have a great season in the three center back defense. We knew he was going to struggle a little bit in that role. Was it catastrophically bad? No, but I think you can make a case that Ryan Bastoni had better season than Skriniar, and I think that's perfectly legitimate to say. Inter is almost certainly not going to sell Lautaro, so they're not going to make a huge plusvalenza there. With Skriniar, who they paid pretty cheap and have had 2 years and is valued a lot, even in a swap deal, they would make a plusvalenza there. The other thing is Inter are heavily linked to Kumbula, who is younger than Skriniar and perfect for the three center back defense. I completely get Inter fans' affection to Skriniar. I ranked him very, very high in my most valuable player list in Serie A just last year. So I'm a big Skriniar guy. And I get the affection for Skriniar. But part of me also does see the logic. If you can get Kumbula at a pretty good price, pay him low wages, make a big plusvalenza on Skriniar, and flip him for a player who could fit in really quite well in Inter's midfield, a player who also is a few years younger than Skriniar, I do see that logic in it if you take away the affection for Skriniar. Look at from the Spurs perspective, and this was also reported on Di Marzio's site. I had a ton of Spurs fans telling me that everyone in England saying that Spurs don't want to get rid of Ndombele, and it was mentioned in Di Marzio's report that Levy sees moving on from Ndombele as essentially admitting failure on a big investment there. But if you can flip that and get Skriniar for him, I think you can sell that to your fans. And I think Ndombele, I'm not a huge expert on him, but he seems to slot quite well when you look at the rest of the players that Inter have in the midfield. Obviously, there's a very good relationship between Inter and Spurs after the whole Christian Eriksen thing, how it was handled. So there is some potential for this deal happening. I've been telling you guys to get ready. This was going to be the summer where you see a lot of swaps. So it does make sense. Again, I get the affection for Skriniar, but to me, if you can bring Kumbula in, you tell me Kumbula and Ndombele come in and Skriniar out, I think you can make a case Inter's better. I really do. What do you make of Ndombele? Do you think that he could? Do you think this is a good opportunity to buy low on a player who's not having a great season?
That's exactly what it is. Yeah, that would be a pretty good move for Inter, in my opinion. Now, if I totally forget Skriniar, I definitely like it more because I do think you're getting Ndombele, who is better than how he's playing currently. And it's just weird what's happened with him and Spurs and Mourinho and everything. Just a year ago, he was a player that really Spurs should be excited about having. So I definitely think it's buying low and maybe getting a high reward. And if you add Ndombele to Hakimi, who already have, and maybe Tonali. Whew, that's not bad. That really is not bad. And on a Chelsea angle, I don't love Mourinho getting Skriniar because that's a good player, and Mourinho would love a center back like that. Who wouldn't? But whatever. Chelsea will be better than Spurs, so I don't care. All right, let's move on. I'm serious. I mean, anybody listening, I guarantee you my team.
I believe it.
So I don't like it, but whatever. Fine. If it keeps Mourinho in the game to an extent, I do kind of enjoy Mourinho being in the game, just not threatening my team. It's actually kind of the perfect fit. So let's move on to this, David. Do you still see Inter as the favorites? I just mentioned him. Do you still see Inter as the favorites for Tonali?
Yeah, I do. And even if they do, even if this Ndombele for Skriniar thing goes over the finish line, I still see Inter as the favorites. Marotta has a great relationship with Brescia, great relationship with Tonali's agent. I think it's maybe going a bit too far to saying that he's Inter's player to lose, but we're really close to that. And I think the domino that happens if Ndombele comes in, if Inter gets Tonali, I do think we'll see Brozovic leave Inter, which would be a tough blow. I mean, I've been a huge Brozovic fan. I've said for a while, usually, as Brozovic goes, so does Inter. But I think with Eriksen, gives him a little more flexibility with where to use him. Brozovic has had some off-field issues. First was caught for drunk driving, then had an issue in an emergency room in Milan where he caused the scene trying to get a friend of his to cut the line in front of other people who had been there longer and had more serious issues. And I think, honestly, the news of this Brozovic thing at the emergency room leaking is another thing that Conte was talking about, how that came out. I don't know if he was implying that if that happened at Juve, that would have never come out. Maybe. But I think there is some momentum for Brozovic to leave Inter. It's another guy they can make a plus valenza on. Now, I think that would be a pretty tough blow. But if you can bring in Tonali and Ndombele and Kumbula and you get rid of Skriniar and Brozovic, still not bad for Inter. I kind of like what they're doing. You never want to lose players as good as Skriniar and Brozovic. But if you replace them that way, that kind of softens the blow. So that's the latest on Inter. And again, I'm going to reiterate that I still think Conte will manage them next season.
Okay. Well, listen, I'll just say, Antonio, I'm not saying it's all your fault. David really outlined well the situation earlier. But Antonio, it's worth it for you to stay. It's worth it for you to stay.
Oh, absolutely.
You are not getting a better opportunity to have a team you want for the rest of your career than this one. And obviously, if this doesn't work out, Antonio, because I know you're listening, well, you're not really going to be somebody that clubs want to hire. Just straight up, you're not.
Yeah, I totally agree.
He's not going to be worth it to clubs. I don't care how smart he is with the game. They'll just look at the track record at the end of the day. They're not going to look at the fine details with what happened in each scenario. They're just going to look at how things ended. So for Antonio's sake, I think he should know that. And unless he truly can't bear being there, he should be there. He should be there. Because player-wise, yeah, we had you rumored for your Ashley Barneses and your Peter Crouches when you were here. I get it. But Tonali and Hakimi, maybe Ndombele, come on. All right, let's move on. David, how would Serge Aurier fit at Milan?
Well, look, right back, I would say, is probably the highest priority for Milan on the transfer market this summer. Calabria and Conti, even when healthy, to me are both below average right backs. You look at the rest of Milan's defense, Chiaier's been excellent. Romagnoli is definitely one of the best center backs in Serie A. Theo Hernandez has been a revelation. There's a lot of momentum for Donnarumma signing an extension. You add Aurier to the mix, that's a nice defense right there. So Milan have been in talks for Aurier. I got to be honest, with Mourinho at Spurs, I'm really not surprised that we see Spurs involved with so many Serie A clubs. Mourinho definitely has very good relationship with Serie A and his entourage as well. So I kind of like this move for Milan if it does happen. I was surprised to see on Di Marzio's side, they said Aurier is valued at around €15 million. We know how hard it is to get wing backs. And look, you know him better than me, Alex. But, you know, sounds like a reasonable fee if Milan can get him over the finish line. What do you think? You think this could be a pretty good move for Milan if they bring him in?
Yeah. His character has always been a little shaky. So it's somebody that, I mean, he either is a good contributor for them for a little bit, like definitely plays well, or I'm not even saying something specific would happen. And I'm not saying I know him to be this huge cancer in the dressing room, but I know of a couple instances where it hasn't always been smooth sailing with him. So I see it going one of two ways. Either he really is a pretty useful player for them because he has talent. He obviously has talent. So he's either a pretty useful player for them for a little bit, or he ends up making no impact at all. So I don't see much in between, to be honest. But while we're on Milan, David, any other concrete targets for them?
Yeah, so Milan, look, the priority for Milan is sorting out the extensions for Donnarumma and Ibrahimovic. And I know some people have asked, you know, can they walk and chew gum at the same time and do both, you know, pursue other targets? Yes and no. I mean, keep in mind, Donnarumma and Ibrahimovic, both very, very big salaries. I think Milan needs to have an idea as to, you know, what they're paying them, if they're paying them next season. I'd be very surprised if both of them don't return, but you got to sort that out. But Aurier is definitely a target for them. The other player that's been offered to them is De La Fu, who really loved his time in Milan when he was there for half season. Watford was relegated, so let's see what happens there. Bakayoko could return to Milan as well. I still think they are somewhat of a factor in the Tonali race, but I do see Inter as more the favorite there. But look, I think Milan have to be really, really happy for what's happened the second part of the season. I don't think they need to really reinvent the wheel to seriously challenge for a Champions League spot next season. To me, the most important thing is resigning Donnarumma for the long term and Ibrahimovic for the short term. If you can bring in a starting caliber right back, and I would definitely bring in a starting caliber winger, then go for some depth here and there. Things are on the bright side for Milan. Another thing that's positive for Milan is Torino's almost certainly going to appoint Giampaolo as their manager, so Milan's going to save his wages for next season. He'll probably get a small buyout, but Milan's going to save some money. So Milan fans should be very optimistic right now.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move to this, David. Do you expect Juve to make any other big moves? And I am even interested in your answer.
So I definitely don't expect Juve to make a big move involving cash, paying significant amount of money for a player. I think it goes back to the fact that once you ask your current players to take a big pay cut in season, it's kind of hard to then turn around and make a big cash acquisition. Now, on the bright side, I think people are waking up to the fact of how amazing that Kulusevski signing is going to be. I think Kulusevski was really as good as any player since Calcio came back. Every 3 days, that guy brought it on the pitch, was almost always the man of the match. I mean, if you just watched a little bit of Parma and you can't see how much of what he brings to the table is what Juve is lacking, I can't help you. I find really laughable that some people are comparing it to the Bernardeschi signing. This is much more like when Juve signed Dybala from Palermo. They had done that big signing before the coronavirus, so they had spent close to $40 million to get Kulusevski, but I think that's really the extent of the big cash move. They, of course, did Pjanic for Arthur, which to me is a very good signing for Juve. So I think those are the two main moves. I think other than that, Milik is certainly a possibility, but it's almost certainly going to be with a player in exchange. Bernardeschi looks to be the likely player, although the image rights might be an issue there. Let's see if they work out, if not Luca Pellegrini or Romero in the deal. And the other one's Jorginho. And I think, you know, I don't see Juve paying a lot of money to Chelsea. The only scenario where I see it happening is similar to the Cuadrado deal, so maybe a multiple loan deal. It doesn't seem like there's much of a future for Jorginho at Chelsea. So I expect maybe those two moves, maybe they go for a wing back. But I certainly don't expect Juve to be putting a substantial amount of money out for any player. So it would have to be some kind of swap or a loan for an incoming player. Mm.
All right, well, last one here of this segment, and this one's so big that it's really not Serie A related. David, do you expect Manchester United to get Jadon Sancho over the finish line?
Yeah, I do. And look, you know, if Fabrizio Romano says they're in the advanced stage and we're talking about the formulas of the deal, that's good enough for me. Very interesting. I mean, it sounds like the valuation won't be really impacted by COVID. So very interesting. Obviously, Man United still has a ton of resources. I know a lot of people. I mean, let's talk briefly about the Sanchez deal. I think the Sanchez to Inter deal is fantastic for all involved. Really no transfer fee involved. Inter picks up his wages for the remainder of the contract. Instead of paying him over 2 years, they are essentially paying him over 3 years. Man United ends up saving a massive amount of money in wages, 55 million euro before taxes next 2 years. Really, really massive. Now, does that mean they can take that 55 million and offer it to Dortmund for Sancho? It doesn't really exactly work that way. But obviously, that's a huge savings. Over 2 years, I would imagine Manchester United would pay Sancho over multiple installments. So that certainly helps. But it's not, I don't see it as, you know, a deal with Inter on Sanchez was agreed. Therefore, we can then accelerate our pursuit of Sancho. I see those a little bit unrelated, but certainly one helps Sanchez to Inter, helps Sancho being more realistic. So, yeah. A very exciting times. Finally, a team in the Premier League keeping up with all of the signings that Chelsea did. So very exciting, to say the least. How much does that concern you, Alex, if they get Sancho?
No, let's go. Let's go. I'm excited. I honestly am. I'm being totally genuine in saying that. Obviously, I'm saying this assuming Kai Havertz is going to be done, which I'm fairly confident he will be.
I agree with that.
Let's go. You know, so I know I put out a lot of propaganda for Jadon Sancho because I wanted him. I genuinely wanted him. Why wouldn't I want him? Very good player. Close with a lot of our players. Sancho, the whole Calum Hudson-Odoi thing. Yeah, I loved it. Fit with Frankie's new blues, like all that stuff. Sure. But it looks like now Chelsea could be getting Timo Werner plus Kai Havertz instead. So great. United, they're clearly back in the top four mix with all the talent they have. And so are Chelsea, and so are Liverpool, and so are City. I'm excited. I think the Premier League is going to be very top four heavy next season. I'm not saying the rest will be poor. I think Arsenal with Arteta actually probably can make a little bit more of a rebuild quicker than people expect. No idea about Spurs. But yeah, I mean, David, let's be real. United should be good. United should have star players. They should, really, just for the game, whether you're a United fan or not. And Jadon Sancho, he's going to Manchester United, one of the biggest clubs in the world. And it'll be good for the league and it'll be good for the sport, in my opinion. And I think it's kind of cool. Havertz, 21. Sancho, maybe a year younger. But this is like they're going to always now be compared to each other as well. Both moving, making huge moves to English clubs. So, yeah, let's go. That's what I got to say.
Awesome. Awesome. So before we get to an interview that really sums up a lot of what we talked about, you'll hear a different perspective from Ricardo Pratese, who's really great on these. Just a quick plug for our Patreon program. We're going to answer a lot of Patreon questions. If you enjoy Cultureland, you'd be getting at least another 20 minutes of this episode. We have usually a bonus interview on Patreon just for our subscribers. Napoli Outsider is going to be a regular on those. You'll hear him once a month on Patreon. You'll hear him once in a while, of course, on our regular episodes as well. We've had Enrico Passarella, Gabriele Romano as well. We also have some really great columns from freelance writers on Calcio, really, really good on Patreon. I'm actually going to be moving in the month of August. My transfer rumor raider is going to be on Patreon. I was going to have it on ESPN, but right now ESPN, and I totally get the decision, prefers to, you know, keep their full-time writers employed and not have freelance writers like me on there. So we're going to make lemonade out of lemons. I will be moving on to transfer rumor raider on Patreon. So if you enjoy all that stuff, I recommend you become a patron. Keep in mind, I use the Patreon program to cover production costs, pay the freelance writers, and the rest we donate to a fantastic charity in Italy called the Insuperabili. They run football academies for kids with disabilities in Italy. Really a great program. We actually made a pretty large donation just now. So you'll be getting extra calcio coverage and doing some good with patrons. So definitely check that out. We also have an amazing community on Patreon. I'm very excited to welcome our next guest, my dear friend Riccardo Pratese. We've had him on many times, so I think the timing is perfect. Riccardo now covers American sports for Gazzetta dello Sport, my favorite newspaper in the world. So at the end of the interview, we'll talk a little bit about the NBA coming back, but I'm really interested in hearing what Riccardo thinks of the NBA compared to what we just saw with calcio. But because Riccardo and his previous incarnation at Gazzetta dello Sport covered Juve and the Italian national team, he was perfect for today because we want to recap a little bit Juve's Scudetto, talk a little bit about Sarri, and also talk about Conte's big rant after the Atalanta game. Riccardo famously is the journalist that asked the question that prompted Conte's very famous quote on the 100-euro restaurant with a $10 bill. Obviously, we're recording this Monday, late morning, Boston time. A ton can change, but Riccardo can offer us some great perspective on that. So with the intro out of the way, Riccardo, it's always a real pleasure to catch up with you. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Ciao, David. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so let's start with Juve. As I mentioned, you covered them for a few years when Conte was there. The Scudetto streak continued. They clinched the 9th one, just 1 point above Inter. So let me ask you, how would you think we're going to look back on this Scudetto for Juve, this specific one? And do you think more so than in years past, there's going to be some teams that are going to regret not taking advantage for what I think was a fairly flawed Juve?
I think 20 years from now, I mean, they will just see the Juventus won the Scudetto, they won the league, because that's how he works in sports mostly. But as of right now, we can say that it wasn't exactly a thing of beauty, right? I mean, Juventus didn't ever basically show the kind of style that was expected. They never show an entertaining soccer that was expected since they hired Sarri. But having said that, I don't think that many teams, or probably any team, should have any regrets in terms of doing more against this Juventus that wasn't, that didn't show the full potential. Because, I mean, we can talk about three teams that these teams were the ones basically that could be the contenders and were the relatively contenders for Juventus. Let's start with Inter. They finished just, like you said, just 1 point below, and they did basically a record, I mean, of points. 82 points, if I'm not wrong, is the best they did in 10 years.
Yeah, it's the same as the treble. Yeah, it was the same points as the treble.
Yeah, we have to go back to Mourinho times, the famous triplets and the treble, like you said, and when they won it all, basically. So I think with the difference, the clear difference in rosters. I mean, I think it's factual. It's not just an opinion. And Juventus had a much better roster than Inter. I don't think, looking back, you could have expected the Inter to do better. Of course, they wasted some points along the way. That's for sure. They were up front. They didn't do their best, but all in all, if you look at the world pass, I think Inter did his best and probably even more. And you can say the same and even more about Atalanta, because I mean, yeah, they finished third. They've been the revelation of the season. They've shown a fantastic soccer, the kind of soccer maybe we expected from Juventus. And their offense was amazing, the best offense of the league. Inter had the best defense. Juventus has none of them. But again, Atalanta was not expected to compete for the Scudetto. So let's go back to square one at the beginning of the season. People didn't even thought that Atalanta could make it to the Champions League in terms of finishing in the top four teams. So I mean, I think they did their best and even more. They've been a little bit unlucky in the matchup against Juventus, because they got the penalty at the very end. Juventus was able to tie with Ronaldo. If not, maybe they could do a little bit more. But again, all in all, you have to consider the big picture, not just an episode. And they did even more than, I mean, anyone, even them, could expect at the beginning of the season. And if you go to Lazio, I know that their supporter probably would have some regrets. But, I mean, the pandemic was really, you know, the difference for Lazio. I mean, Lazio has like 13, 14 very good players. And then I have other guys that are not the same level. Let's not sugarcoating. I mean, it is what it is. And playing every 3 days after the stop, I mean, after the restart, after the pandemic did stop the league, they basically, with 2-3 injured guys, they basically had a top 11 lineup, and that was it. The other guys were not up to that standard. And it was, I mean, what happened was, I mean, it couldn't be avoided, in my opinion. They just had no chance in this condition to be the kind of rival that they thought they could be for Juventus until the very end.
Yeah. So based on your answer, it doesn't sound like you think things would have been that different had there not been a stoppage with the pandemic, right? I guess maybe you can make a case for Lazio. They would have played a lot fewer games. Do you think they're maybe the only team that finishes in a different position in the standings? Do you think ultimately Juve wins the Scudetto anyways?
I will make a case for Lazio. I think Juventus was still the team to beat, that's for sure. But I think Lazio, I really believe Lazio could have made, you know, a thriller until the very end. I still think Juventus was the better team, but I mean, a stranger thing had happened, and Juventus didn't play full speed all league long. Again, with playing once per week, remember, Lazio didn't have any cup. I think Lazio could have tried to compete until the very end. I don't think for Inter or Atalanta would have been any better. They had the cup, they don't have, I mean, the kind of roster. Remember, Inter didn't have even a striker behind Lautaro Martinez and Lukaku, with Sanchez out for some months. And so with Sanchez, they were a completely different team. But again, I think Lazio could have been the only one regretting the pandemic. But once again, nobody wanted the pandemic. It's not anybody's fault. So I think the league did, I mean, their best. They tried to do their best to restart. And all in all, I think they did a good job. And Juventus, even if it wasn't a sexy showing, it was a deserving winner.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Sarri. So obviously you mentioned, and I totally agree, is that we really very rarely saw glimpses of what we expected of him offensively. I can maybe count on one hand the games where I definitely felt we saw that. But what do you make of his first season? He at least does win the Scudetto. We don't know what's going to happen with Lyon. But how much blame do you think he deserves for the team not looking great and the Scudetto, you know, being as close as it was?
Honestly, a lot.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, again, if you look at the roster, Juventus' roster was much better than any other opponents, in my opinion. And he was hired not to win, because he, like you said, Juventus won 8 times in a row, so winning the league was almost a given, but just to show a different kind of soccer, and was never shown, honestly. Also, in terms of communication, I think he faced a lot of trouble, and not always it was, I mean, there, not always he looked like the right guy in the right place. That was my, if you remember when we did a podcast at the beginning of the season, that was my biggest concern about him. Not just the overall quality of his coaching. I think he's a very good coach. Just to be a good fit for Juventus, that is very particular and winning club. And I think, I mean, when you hire him just to, especially for Champions League purposes, and because in league play they want to see a much better, a much more entertaining show and a more sexy show. Also for, honestly, for business reason, for marketing reason, and he's not able to do it. I mean, he has his, I think he has his fault, and you can say in his, if you want to be the devil advocate, the devil lawyer, you can say, you know, he didn't have the right players for his kind of soccer, and that's not wrong, honestly. But at the same time, the quality of the player all the players overall was pretty high. And he won the Scudetto just because Ronaldo was amazing and Dybala was pretty good. So his strikers just made the difference, but not because we saw some sort of chorus, singing together. That's my point.
No, I think that's a very fair analysis. So yeah, I agree. Ronaldo had a great season, over 30 goals. But can we say maybe the best thing about Sarri's first season at Juve is that he had a significant hand in turning things around for Dybala? I mean, this time last year, you know, Andy Matsa said Dybala was being shopped to anyone that would pay a big amount to give Juve a big plusvalenza. Now Dybala's about to sign a big contract with Juve. It looks like he's going to be their signature players for years to come. So do you think it's fair to say the best thing we can say about Sarri's first year at Juve is that he contributed to that turnaround?
I think it is. I did a good job for Dybala and for the club, because like you said, right now Dybala is an asset that looks like he's going to stay for quite a while. Juventus could become, you know, the next big thing. Ronaldo is not getting younger like everybody else. Even Ronaldo, even the soccer shot got older. Even if him and Ibrahimovic looked pretty good, I would say, in this league. But again, and Dybala was pretty good. Was very good. I mean, I don't want to, again, Dybala is a very good player. So it's not like Sarri all of the sudden, out of nowhere, made a good player become a fantastic player. And at the end of the day, Dybala scored overall the whole season, if I'm not wrong, 17 goals. And you can say that just in the league, there are players like, Caputo and João Pedro that scored more than him, and just in the league play. So it's not like Dybala scored 40 goals. He scored, 17 in the whole season. But again, he looked pretty good, and he looked like a guy who could be the future of the club. And we were very obsessed about, we are in Italy very obsessed about tactical moves, schemes, all this stuff, very strategic wise, and we were not sure that Ronaldo and Dybala could play together, with Ronaldo having a great season. And what Sarri was able to do was able to make it happen. Both of them had a great season, and Ronaldo was amazing, but at the same time, Dybala is back to his best.
Absolutely. Well said. So let's talk about Ronaldo a little bit, because, you know, interestingly, you know, he was brought in for the Champions League, and in the Champions League, he's performed as far as I'm concerned. But he ended up really being decisive. Definitely this Scudetto, you got to wonder if they win it without him. That being said, take me more in general. If you could go back in time 2 years ago, would you advise Juve to still go ahead and do the Ronaldo deal based on what we know today?
I would absolutely do. I mean, he's been great on the pitch. I mean, even in this league, and again, he's not getting younger, but he scored 31 goals and some were the difference from, you know, having to fight until the very last second for the league and winning with, you know, a little bit of margin so they don't have to get scared. And off the court, it was amazing in terms of, you know, the marketing, the moves, and in terms of the attention it brought to the Serie A. Because, I mean, when Serie A before Ronaldo was seen in many, from many perspectives, as, you know, as a league that was slowly, but going, I mean, slowing down, actually. And after he came, I mean, many other good players, some of them old players, but still great players, came back to Serie A or decided to come for the first time in Serie A. Again, if you look at just the Juventus perspective, he won twice the league, and he was a difference maker both times. And in Champions League last year, he was amazing. If you remember, yeah, you know, the comeback against Atletico Madrid, I mean, that comeback had his signature. It was amazing. And again, we have to wait the end of the season. We have to wait what's going to happen in the Champions League knockout rounds. Juventus, I mean, is a little bit in trouble because they lost against Lyon. The French club 1-0 first leg. Really, you don't know exactly what to expect from Lyon right now after the, you know, the French league, the Ligue 1 was stopped for the pandemic, and it was one of the few European leagues that didn't, you know, they didn't restart eventually. So, but again, it's not a good result. But you know, you can count on Ronaldo. That has been always the same refrain, again and again. And I think without Ronaldo, I mean, Juventus would have been really in trouble.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And the marketing thing cannot be understated. You know, I'm based in the U.S. You're very familiar with the U.S. market. It's night and day the coverage Juve gets since he arrived. And that's part of it. But I would say even just on the pitch, been sensational. I agree with you in the Champions League and what he's done this season in Serie A. So let's talk about the other, before we move on to Conte, because I definitely want to get your thoughts there. One more question on Juve. Let's just talk briefly about De Ligt. I thought he got off to an unfortunate start, was a little bit unlucky. I thought he was really sensational for a while in 2020. He's been a little bit injured, but I think overall been a really, really good addition for Juve. What do you make about his first season in Turin?
Well, it's been the only new guy, basically had a very good season. Because, I mean, if you look at the Ramsey, I mean, he had a bad season. Danilo, he had a bad season. Even Rabiot, he got better in the end, but overall, he had a bad season, pretty bad season. And Higuain, I mean, he came back, and honestly, he's not at his best anymore. It was useful, but it was not great at all. So I think De Ligt was the only new guy, only newcomer to Juventus that really performed at this level. Of course, he wasn't like that at the beginning. But for a defender, we talked about that before together, and we agreed. They have to give us credit, because we said when he was in trouble, when he wasn't playing up to his potential, to his talent, that it was only a matter of time, because the quality were there, and the second part of the season, it was amazing, not just good, amazing. It's not easy for a defender who comes from, you know, Holland to settle in at the beginning, because Italy soccer is very difficult. It is more tactical, especially defensively. I mean, there is more care about defending than offending most of the time. in Holland, is the opposite. So it was asked different kind of stuff, and Sarri was trying, with not so much success, honestly, but it was trying to change the approach of defensive line, in Juventus defensive line, trying to be more aggressive, to play more high, so to be less conservative or more, again, more aggressive. So at the beginning, it wasn't easy. He caught a break when Chiellini got injured, so he didn't have to worry to get seated by Sarri to become a bench player, because, I mean, Chiellini is the captain, and he was going to play. He was playing well before the injury. So, but he took advantage of the opportunity. He started to play much better, and in the restart after the pandemic, I mean, it was amazing. It was probably one of the best players, top three, top four player in Juventus overall, and probably the best in the restart, in my opinion. It was really, really good in the last couple of months.
Absolutely. So, well said. So, Juve, I think you did a great job covering that. So, let's talk a little bit about Conte. And again, I really want to highlight, we're recording this in Italy. It's about 5:30 in the afternoon. You won't hear this interview till about this time tomorrow. So a lot can change. So to recap things, yesterday after the Atalanta match, Conte exploded, talked a lot about issues with the club. He said it really didn't have to do with the transfer market, but more had to do with protecting the team. A lot was made about, you know, leaks to the press, and he talked about this being something that Spalletti had brought up before. He said that the club wasn't doing enough to protect the team. So it doesn't really sound like this was transfer market related, but more about issues going on at the club. I also want to highlight that right before we started recording this interview, Conte came out and said that he took a 3-year contract with Inter. The project is for 3 years, and that he is going to fight and use all his resources to make sure this is a winning project. So you can read that he's trying to bring the changes that he thinks are necessary to help the club win. And he also vehemently disagreed with the report from Repubblica that he was in touch with people at Juve to kind of figure out if there was an opening, if Sarri was leaving. So the reason I wanted Riccardo to come on to talk about the Juve Scudetto, it worked out perfectly with Conte, because as I mentioned on the top, Riccardo covered Conte for years, and he's the journalist that got that very famous quote on the restaurant with the 10 euro bill. So floor is yours, Riccardo.
Yeah, and it could
tell
be,
us
I'm
all
not
your
sure,
thoughts
but it could
on
have
all
been,
this.
Could have been, again, in after the match against Atalanta. But anyway, it was the same kind of rant. In fact, it was, okay, he said that you don't go with 10 euros in a 100 euros restaurant. But what he meant was that you can't be asked to win the Champions League if you don't have the players that are good enough to compete to that level. So at that time, he wanted the club to bring him players that, in his opinion, were better than the ones that he already had. He wanted the better team to be able to really try to fight for Champions League, and not just to be asked about it when he didn't have the talent to try to make it happen. That was the situation. Right now, the situation, I think, is a little bit different in terms that I think it was hard by people complaining that Inter could do more than they did. And with all the points they made, they were able to pick up. I was really disgusted by this kind of discussion. And Conte is always Conte. I mean, when you hire Conte, you got him, and you know what you got. I mean, you got one of the best manager in Europe right now, one of the best in the world. In terms of results, he's a guy who will always deliver one way or another, depending on the context, but he's going to deliver. But you know that he's going to be a guy who will bring with him a lot of collateral effect, and it's gonna be for sure. Like, it's not gonna happen. It's only a matter of when, not of if you know what I mean. So, my point is, he's trying to put the base to do better the next year. and he liked to talk publicly, because if you go public, I mean, he has more, you know, attention of everybody. And he got, I mean, he's, again,
it worked.
More,
it worked. Cool.
Yeah, he's more, yeah. And again, he wants more. And what you, by more, I mean, this time, not necessarily, not only to new players, they already got, Hakimi, right? The guy from Borussia Dortmund, the right fullback that is going to be very good, the key piece for him next season if he stays. But I think he wants more power. When he talks about protection, he wants to be, in my opinion, he wants to be the face of the club. I want to be like the guy who represents Inter in every situation. He wants to be protected. He wants to be, again, the face of the club, of the franchise, we would say, in American sport. And I don't know if he's gonna stay, but I know that who hired him, Marotta, knows him very well because they worked together in Juventus. So he knew what he was bringing him inside, what he was bringing in, and he knew perfectly that Conte is this kind of guy. Is not necessarily personal. It's just that he wants most power, most resources possible. And he's going to go public to try to achieve them. I mean, he's not like a guy. He's not a guy who will just follow orders. He's not. His nature is never going to be. He's not going to change. He's not a young guy. So I think he expected something like that. He already had a pretty good big rant against after, you know, a big loss in Champions League, if you remember. And again, he was talking about players that time that they didn't have players they used to, you know, the big stages in Europe. And this time, I think it's more about, you know, having more power in terms of having more power within the society, within the club. And I think if they want, I mean, they chose Conte, they knew what he was bringing in. They should keep him. And work on 3 years project. Conte is not a guy who stay there 5 years or 10 years.
Oh yeah,
he's not that kind of guy. No way. But I mean, if you want to win, I think I don't see, you know, a manager who comes in and can do a better job in terms of results than Conte. So you have to, you know, you have to accept this kind of collateral effect. If you don't, I mean, you will find different kind of coaches. More soft, more easy to deal with, but I'm not sure they're gonna be better. Anyway, the name that you know every rumor report is Max Allegri, who follow him at Juventus, won a lot after Conte. But we are talking about completely different kind of philosophy. So I don't know I wouldn't change everything after the year. It's not be great, but it's not be bad at all. And he put the fundamentals. I mean, to build from there and to become a much better team, much more competitive team the next season. And we will see what happens. But my take is I wouldn't get rid of Antonio Conte.
Yeah, neither would I. As much as I'm a big fan of Allegri, and I think he'd actually do pretty well there. So let me ask you this again. So much can change in Italian football, we know. But let's go on the assumption Conte stays, because I do think at the end of the day that'll happen. But even if it doesn't, let's just go on the assumption that he stays. They brought in Hakimi already. Juve looks, you know, definitely vulnerable, to say the least. Do you think it's fair to say that if next season Inter doesn't win the Scudetto, it's a letdown? And do you think maybe Conte, as they would say in Italy, porta le mani avanti, to maybe try to lower those expectations a little bit? Because it seems we're kind of heading that way. So, A, do you think those expectations would be fair, that if Inter doesn't win the Scudetto next year, it's a letdown? I agree with you that this season, to me, was very positive for Inter. A lot of the bases were placed. They signed some very good players. There's more coming. So what do you think for next season?
I think he does, but doesn't mean he's wrong. So, I mean, he does his own interest. Like everybody is just more vocal about that than many others. And that's what he does. I think it depends from transfer market, because you can't say right now, Juventus would still have the better roster, even if some players are getting old. even if Pjanic has been traded. Let's use a, you know, an American expression with Barcelona for Arthur. And Pjanic, even if he didn't play well with Sarri, like we expected, he's an heck of a player and he's very, very talented. So I think we will have to see what the transfer market brings to Juventus and Inter. But I think after 1 year of work with Conte, the players, if they both, his philosophy, and I think they did, they will be more prepared to challenge Juventus since they won. Even their expectation will be higher. And that will help. Will help Conte a lot. Also, I want to see what's happening in Europa League. Conte, you know better than me, has been pretty good with the national team, but has not been very successful in Champions League and Europa League. Maybe this is the time that, you know, the story changes. I don't see teams that are unbeatable in this Europa League for Inter. Manchester United is a very good team, but it's not a great team, in my opinion. It's not much better than Inter, at least. They're pretty even, in my opinion. Could be better, but not by far. And again, so I want to see what's happening and see Conte that deserves a chance to prove he can make it happen even in Europe. And then, of course, next season, if he stay, Scudetto is going to be the biggest goal, the main goal for Inter. They will have a chance, but as of right now, and I cannot predict the future, comparing the roster as of right now, Inter would have a much better chance, but Juventus would still be the team to beat.
Absolutely. So let's close on this, Riccardo, and I always like to ask you this since the pandemic started, because you're based in Italy, but you have a huge passion for the United States. You cover American sports brilliantly on Gazzetta. I honestly prefer reading your stuff than a lot of the stuff here in the U.S. So let me ask you, the NBA bubble is going very well. You and I were chatting before this. Obviously, Calcio was able to complete the season. I have to be honest, when that calendar came up with those games every 3 days, and there was first the requirement that if a player went out, the whole team would quarantine, then they took that out. But even just taking that out, all those games, all those tests, Calcio was able to complete it. NBA is off to a good start with the bubble. So as someone that is familiar with both, tell us what stands out to you about the difference in the two. I thought you made such a great point the first time I had you on during the pandemic that, you know, different countries handle things in different ways because they have different resources or whatnot. So just give me your thoughts on the difference on what you've noticed between Calcio completing the season and the NBA bubble so far.
Well, again, the stage of the pandemic is pretty different. I mean, in Europe, we are much more forward, hopefully, and we look much better than US right now. We had trouble well before you, and the virus was spread here well before. But I mean, we have been able to fight with quite success, and so it was pretty good success to be able to play even without fans, and honestly, we couldn't have fans. It would have been a risk that nobody wanted to take and didn't make any sense to take. But we were able to play soccer, not only finishing the season, but playing, you know, in the stadium of every club, of every team. Because remember, we have to remember that, you know, the franchise of the clubs are, you know, part of the city and a big part of the city. So, I mean, playing in the bubble is not ideal, if you know what I mean, because it just brings the teams away from the environment, natural environment and social environment too. So I think in Italy they did all in all a good job. We were very worried initially about the protocols. We were very afraid in terms of having some positives, and it could be a domino effect that would just, you know, ruin the restart, but it didn't happen. All in all, they did a good job, and I think all in all, they deserve a good grade for what they did. Even like I said, some teams were penalized, like Lazio and some others like Juventus. were, you know, helped by the situation. But again, it's not anybody's fault, and something that you couldn't change in any possible way. They just did the best they could. In terms of, you know, American sports, the ones in the bubble, I mean, I do follow, you know, the NBA. I write about it, the NBA, the basketball, and it's going well. But all the sports in the bubble are going well. Hockey is doing fine. Soccer is doing fine. The WNBA, the female basketball, is doing pretty well. So in the U.S. right now is the best solution possible. I don't think could be permanently. I mean, the solution forever and ever. Everybody hopes that this situation got much better. We can find a way to, you know, to defeat definitely, you know, the pandemic. Until we do, I think the bubble is the best environment right now in the U.S. In terms of the differences, I mean, we didn't have opt-out. We didn't have players or big players that didn't want to come back on the pitch. In Europe, it's still much more, it's still just a sport mainly. And U.S., sport is more, there isn't more social messages, like you said. NBA is doing a good job just spreading the social messages, using the athletes are the ones that want to do that. You know, there is also some politics if you want involved, and players are more, you know, they are more models for everybody in US. They want to show their way, and it's very, very, very different from here, where, you know, they just they care more about what happens on the pitch, and they don't expose themselves as much as the American athletes, especially black athletes. You said, I mean, you saw this day, I mean, what they did, the biggest, you know, even LeBron James, even the Giannis Antetokounmpo, even the big guys. So I think these are the two main differences. Bubble in US, right solution there. Not bubble here, right solution here. Athletes who opt out and do more in terms of spreading social messages in US, and you know, in Europe, in Italy in particular, they just played soccer and they did as well as they could considering the circumstances.
Well, Ricardo, considering the circumstances, we couldn't have had anyone better than you on. Thank you so much for enlightening us on Juve, Conte, and the NBA. I always like to plug this. I know some of you are learning Italian. We also have a decent amount of listeners in Italy. Ricardo's book, 30 su 30, which is about his journey to all the NBA arenas, is great. It's great if you love basketball, great if you love travel, really great stuff. Check out Ricardo's excellent work on American sports on Gazzetta dello Sport, and hopefully we'll have you again soon to talk some calcio. So thanks so much for coming on, my friend. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. It was great as always. Thanks a lot.